Training to become a surgeon can feel like training for the Olympics. Then we finish and we realize we're just adults with jobs. Life after training is an entirely different landscape. You need to get to know you. What does success mean for you? What brings you joy? What's your purpose? I'm Dr. Mel Thacker, an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and coach. I'm here to help surgeons like you rediscover themselves. Welcome to Surgeons with Purpose. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. So today I want to talk to you about reputation and malpractice insurance. And this is going to be about actual strategies that you have control over. This is really about getting squarely into understanding what you control. And yes, you do control whether a patient gives you a good or bad review. And you control whether or not a patient will sue you. And when I say that, I don't mean that you people please people to death, or that you stop having your own boundaries, or that you tell them everything that they want to hear, or that you let them walk all over you. That is not what patients want. I mean, honestly, I have a lot of disdain for the saying in business that we want to be the three A's. You may have heard of this: available, affable, and able. I think it's such bullshit because we don't want to be over available. It should be available with boundaries. Because if we are giving and giving and giving until we are depleted, we are no longer showing up as our highest selves, as the highest version of ourselves. We're no longer giving people the best version of us. And people pleasing is pretending and lying. And that is giving them the lowest quality version of ourselves. That's going to make people feel disconnected from us. And they're going to be more likely to try and hurt us by giving us a horrible review or reporting us to the board or calling their lawyer, right? And affable, I take umbrage with that because sometimes we're not affable. Like sometimes we don't feel great. Sometimes we're having a bad day. A lot of times we're having a bad day. We're overwhelmed, we're exhausted, we're running behind, and we have our head going in a million different directions and we're distracted. So yeah, we aren't always affable. And asking us to pretend to be affable is again asking us to pretend. And when we pretend, we are not in the truth of our knowing. We are lying. And people can sense that and they lose trust in us. You're basically telling someone to pretend when you say be affable. And you're telling someone to burn out when you say be available. So I guess the only A out of the three A's that I actually agree with is able. Of course we should be able. We should be operating on people and seeing people in clinic only if we're able to, right? But available and affable can go right into the garbage can. Like, it's nonsense. We should not be over available. We should not be over affable. And we should not be affable when we're not feeling affable. So let's change it to appropriately available, or available with boundaries. That can be the first A. Authentic can be the second A. And then able can still be the third A, I guess. Okay, those can be our new three A's. And so let's talk about unhappy patients, upset patients who slander our name online or report us to the Board of Medicine or who sue us, and why that happens and what you can do about it. Because there is so much that is in your control, believe it or not. Like, you have a ton of control over what your patient does. What do I mean by that? There are plenty of studies, lots of literature that supports the fact that if you develop know, like, and trust with your patients, they are going to be much less likely to retaliate against you. Your best insurance plan is to create know, like, and trust with every single patient. And so the question becomes, how do you do that? And how do you do that efficiently? I'm going to give you a five-step process that you can implement that will build know, like, and trust with every single patient. But first, there are a lot of different concepts I want to go through with you to kind of set the stage. So if you really just want the five steps, you can go right to the end of this podcast. But I have a lot more I want to talk to you about first to kind of build this up a little more. So first, I want to read a quote from a review article called Communication Gaps, A Root Cause of Malpractice Claims. It summarizes everything really nicely. And so this study states, quote, overwhelmingly, the dominant theme in these studies' findings was a breakdown in the patient-physician relationship, most often manifested as unsatisfactory patient-physician communication. Study participants described the perceived communication problems as follows. physicians would not listen, would not talk openly, attempted to mislead them, or did not warn them of long-term problems. Other communication problems cited included perceptions that doctors deserted patients or were otherwise unavailable, devalued patient or family views, delivered information poorly, or failed to understand the patient's perspective. Clearly, these studies underscore the well-known principle that good communication is the cornerstone of the physician-patient relationship. As the authors have often observed and is well documented in the literature, patients are not likely to sue physicians with whom they have developed a trusting and mutually respectful relationship. Simply put, patients do not sue doctors they like and trust. This observation tends to hold true even when patients have experienced considerable injury as a result of a medical mistake or misjudgment, unquote. And so let that sink in for a minute. So I just want to take a minute to point out that they mention patients do not like it when their doctors are unavailable. And when I say that available is a bunch of bullshit, I'm not saying that we should be unavailable. I want to be clear about this. I'm saying we need to be available with boundaries. And so that means we are giving an appropriate amount. We are filling ourselves up first. We are giving from a place of abundance, and we are not overextending ourselves, because ultimately that's not sustainable. That leads to burnout. I'm advocating against being over available, and I think that's what we all expect we need to do in order to make people happy. And I'm telling you, you can be available for people with boundaries. You can be like, yeah, you get me in these ways. You get to talk to my nurse or my medical assistant or the PA. You don't have to call everyone back. And it's going to be mutually beneficial for both you and your patients. And then this quote also talks about developing a trusting and mutually respectful relationship with patients. I mean, that is really the heart of the matter. And you have so much control in that arena. Developing a trusting and mutually respectful relationship with patients. That is what this podcast is all about. Okay. And it doesn't honestly matter what you do. You can do all the right things. Patients can still retaliate against you. I say this from experience. Okay. And so what can you do? So there is a lot you can do, and there's a lot you can change to insulate yourself from patients retaliating against you. You are not powerless. You are not helpless. You are not just simply at the whims of unhinged, upset patients. You have so much control, okay? And I want you to listen to this podcast as many times as you need, because it might be a lot of new concepts for you. And then go out, implement the 5 steps that I give you, and then make some mistakes. You know, it's going to be clunky and weird at first. Come back, listen again, and try it again, and just keep going out and re-implementing these steps, and you will have such amazing relationships with people, and you will actually maybe even enjoy clinic. My goal here is to teach you to create know, like, and trust with all of your patients, to create mutually respectful and trusting relationships with people, with all people. And this isn't something we learn in residency. It's not something we learn in training. I have learned it. I've learned it really, really well, and I've mastered it. And that's why I want to share it with you all. And I've seen the results of it. And I will say it has been put to the test. I mean, I've made mistakes in my career. I've erred. And interestingly, the patients on the receiving end of my mistakes are the patients I often develop the most close relationships with, the most trusting relationships with. I'm able to develop know, like, and trust with them in the face of my own errors and mistakes. And you can do that too. When you realize that you don't have to be perfect, you just have to drop your ego and be a human to create safety for yourself in this profession, it's like a huge weight off your shoulders. You are not one mistake away from it all falling apart. You are not going to make a mistake and then your whole career is going to be over. In fact, it's expected that you make mistakes, and you can show up for every patient on the receiving end of a mistake in a way that serves both you and them. So I used to very easily and naturally and innately develop know, like, and trust with my patients. This was just something that came very natural to me when I was a newbie doctor. I would connect with everyone very quickly, and I didn't realize I was doing it, but the way patients perceived me was that I was this genuine human being, and they tended to kind of gravitate to me. My patients tended to really like me a lot, and it was kind of like my sneaky superpower. I thought I was just being myself, but then I started to burn out in 2018, 2019, and something shifted in me. I started depersonalizing. Patients started to annoy me. I no longer connected with my people. I was showing up to work in disconnection and distraction. And during that time, I also discovered this branch of medicine called lifestyle medicine. And I thought it was like the end all be all. And so I changed my diet to a plant-based diet, and I started pushing that on people without getting their buy-in first, without asking them if they were willing and motivated to make any sort of lifestyle change. And I was like, why are people not wanting this? I just kind of like shoved it down their throats. And so I quickly shifted from a person who was meeting patients where they were at and showing up as my genuine self and seeing them for who they were and not judging them, to someone who judged the hell out of them and who no longer showed up as like an authentic human. I used to be non-judgmental no matter the person that came through the door, whether they were a homeless person off the street or a drug addict or someone who had a very different political view than me. It didn't matter. They would walk in and I would meet them where they were at and completely accept them and give them the same attention, care, and treatment I would give to anyone. I actually probably gave my presence more to people of lower socioeconomic status because I grew up under the poverty line and they kind of felt like home. I felt much more comfortable with them versus someone who had like a higher socioeconomic status. Like I was very intimidated by people who were VIPs or CEOs or even fellow doctors and even lawyers would intimidate me. And so I felt more comfortable around people who were kind of blue collar and of a lower income level. As I was burning out in 2018 and 2019 and getting deep into lifestyle medicine, I kind of got angry over the fact that the way the world works is that we give everybody pills and procedures when we can learn how to prevent and reverse certain diseases if we just change our lifestyles. And it seemed very simple to me, but as we all know, simple is not easy. And you can't take an idea or a concept or a process and shove it down someone's throat and just put it on someone when they're not ready to receive it. But that's what I was doing. I was shoving my agenda down people's throats, whether they wanted it or not. And when I started doing that, that's when people started to complain about me. I had 2 board complaints within the matter of like a year. And so that really opened my eyes to how I was approaching patients and to the fact that I lost my ability to develop know, like, and trust. And that was when I kind of started to spiral. That started me down this rabbit hole of there's something wrong with me. I started to feel like I wasn't worthy, or I was made aware of the fact that I felt like I was unworthy. All of my anxieties and my terrified little child started to come out. You know, I was trying to shove her in a closet, but she started to come out like full throttle, and insomnia and panic attacks and all of those things started to come up. And I talked about that in a previous podcast, but essentially I completely disconnected. Like this was like the bottom falling out, the worst place of my burnout. And so then I was able to find coaching. And with time and coaching and therapy, I was able to build myself back up again. And now I feel like I am showing up as my highest self again. And I am developing these really close, authentic relationships with patients. And so I want to teach you what I did when I went from this completely disconnected, like ego only, agenda carrying, like I know best, you don't know anything, I'm the only one with all the answers. And if you don't listen to me, you're an idiot and you're doing it wrong. And I know what's right. And, you know, from that kind of a place to back into connection, where I was out of the expert's mind and into the don't know mind. Like now I'm more like, the more I learn, the more questions I have. And I only know a little bit. I don't really know anything, honestly. And patient, you are the CEO of your body. I'm merely a consultant. I'll give you some recommendations. You can take them or leave them. And whether you take what I give you has no effect on my self-worth. I'm happy to partner with you. So I basically went from this paternalistic doctor who thought she knew all the answers to a doctor coach who was meeting people exactly where they were at and holding unconditional space for them. And what I mean by unconditional space is that I got to this place where I was able to be physically, mentally, and emotionally present for every patient, and able to become an untroubled container for that patient to bring all of the troubles in the world. And I think if you've had a person like that in your life who is just fully present for you, you can realize what a powerful thing that is, how great it feels when someone can hold that untroubled space. I love the whole concept or metaphor of thinking of an untroubled container as a sky. And so what really benefits us is if we can basically walk into an exam room as the sky, as big as the sky, as big as you can possibly fathom, like unfathomably big, right? And we walk into the clinic with this open space that has no troubles and just completely open. And then the patient is almost like a storm that comes in with all of their troubles, because often they come in with a lot of troubles. That's why they're seeing us. And we're the space that is able to hold that for them without judging it. Just like the sky doesn't judge a storm, we will not judge the patient and their troubles. And so that is what people are looking for. Like, that is how you develop a trusting and mutually respectful relationship. And if you've experienced that with another human being, they're showing up for you as an untroubled container, you know the power of that. And so I'm going to teach you how to do that a little later in this podcast. So let me give you a couple of examples, because I'm sure you all find yourselves in these positions where you're meeting people that you find it hard to hold untroubled space for, especially in this divisive world, right? To hold that non-judgmental space, that unconditional space, because that's where the challenge comes in. And I'm telling you, if you're able to hold unconditional, untroubled space, non-judgmental space for everyone, for every person from every walk of life, like, you open up this whole new world of an ability to connect. And so, for example, I remember when I was a third-year medical student and I was rotating through the medicine service. It was right after Hurricane Katrina. I think it was 2006, because I remember Katrina being talked about in the news cycle, like the aftermath and the FEMA response and everything. And there was this patient who was in handcuffs, and he was getting treated for hepatocellular carcinoma. And I remember we were consulted on him, so we went to go see him. I don't remember what the consult was for, but the intern and I went to see him, and the intern who was working with me took me aside, and he was like, "Dude, karma. Like, you know what that guy did, that guy in the handcuffs? He's a child molester." This is probably a HIPAA violation, but well. So anyway, I remember having such disgust for that person and like so much disdain for him. And I remember feeling it. It was like, it felt so icky. And I was just like, ugh, that's so awful. And how could you possibly hold space for someone like that, right? But imagine what it would be like to have compassion for that person, for this child molester. And I don't say that to insinuate that we should condone his behavior, absolutely not, or that we should excuse it or be indifferent to it. But I was feeling disgust and just ickiness and grossed out, and like the injustice that he was getting, he was being treated for cancer. Like, part of me thought he didn't deserve it, that this guy dying of cancer wasn't deserving of cancer treatment, or even like the money that probably like taxpayers had to spend for him to get that treatment. And all of that ickiness that I was feeling in my body, he wasn't feeling any of it, which is so fascinating. I was the one who was feeling it. I was having a negative emotion and like a visceral response in my own body. And then I was having to deal with the negative repercussions of that emotion, of those emotions. But what if I was able to have some discernment and widen my aperture and like see the big picture, and looking at this troubled human being who ultimately I think ended up dying of cancer? And what if I looked at him and considered his lived experience? Like, perhaps he was abused as a child and he was perpetuating a vicious cycle. And maybe that's the reason, or like the driving force behind him hurting children. And so I guess what I'm saying is that we're meeting people in just a moment in time, and we don't have the full picture of why they are who they are and why they do what they do. And most people do horrible things like hurting children because they are suffering internally. They don't do horrible things to others because they are well. They do it because a lot of the times they were abused themselves. And so we don't have that data, and like, we don't have that information. We only have the information from a moment in time. And so with this patient, with this guy, all I had was the information that he was jaundiced. He had hepatocellular carcinoma. He had handcuffs on. And the reason he had handcuffs on was allegedly because he did something horrible to children. And I had no more details than that. And why would he do that? Obviously, happy, well-adjusted, mentally stable people do not hurt children. And so there's so much information behind that. And so if we can open up a little bit of a door to compassion when we kind of humanize the villain, when we do that, we're creating like villain compassion. And when we create villain compassion, that's when we stop hurting ourselves. So it's not for the villain. It's for us. It's for our own discernment. It's for our own ability to move through the world without feeling overwhelmed from negative emotion. Because if we have hatred or disdain or disgust or indignation towards someone because of what they chose to do, that other person decided to take action, to harm another individual, to harm other people. If we feel the negative emotion because of what they did, we're only hurting ourselves. They don't feel our negative emotion. And sometimes we feel these negative emotions that last for like days or weeks. And so we're causing ourselves unneeded stress and the effects of that stress. And let me be clear that that doesn't mean that there aren't consequences. Like, villains should not get off scot-free. There should be consequences. People who hurt other people should be kept away from others. And so this guy would have gone back to jail if he didn't end up dying in the hospital, but you know, he should go back to jail. That's where he should have been. We have the choice to not further our own negative emotion within ourselves, because it doesn't change the fact that that guy did what he did. And he is suffering the consequences from it, for it. You know, he did suffer the consequences for it. So similarly, I was just talking to a friend who had a patient come in to her clinic who was wearing a t-shirt that in one fell swoop offended the entire trans community and the entire scientific community. And so she, as would be expected, had a negative emotional reaction to that patient because of their t-shirt. But again, the patient didn't experience the effect of cortisol and stress hormones that she was experiencing in her body, like the norepinephrine and things. I mean, maybe he sensed them, but he didn't have those same neurochemicals flooding his system that she did when she was triggered. And what I'm saying is that we create ourselves unnecessary stress when we immediately allow ourselves to go into judgment. Like, if patients come in with a political thing on their hat or their shirt, or we see in their chart that they never got COVID vaccinated, or whatever the patient comes in with that could be triggering for you, where they have a belief that is different than your own, what I'm telling you is that you're harming yourself and you're inhibiting your ability to connect with other patients when you move into judgment and let yourself have that like automatic reaction, that negative reaction. Because once you're in that space of disconnection and judgment and anger and indignation, now you've kind of corrupted your interactions with the next couple of patients that you're about to see, because you're in those emotions. You're in that anger versus if you were able to hold untroubled, like unconditional, non-judgmental space for that person that triggered you, you were able to find some common ground in the most uncommon of places with the most uncommon of people. Now you are kind of insulating yourself from corrupting the next couple of interactions with patients, right? And you're protecting yourself from having like unnecessary stress responses. And so another option is to get like super curious and maybe even ask them about it. I mean, I think about that patient that came in with that really offensive shirt to my friend's clinic, and I wonder what would have happened if like she got curious, and or like had that patient come into my clinic, would I have been able to get curious? To say like, hey, what's with the shirt? And got him talking about it. And again, when we get curious, we start finding common ground with the most uncommon of people. And when we start getting into inquiry and questioning these patients from like a non-judgmental, just purely curious space, who are these people who are very different walks of life than us, who have very different beliefs than us, we are not saying that we agree with them, okay? Not at all. We are merely just trying to understand for our own ability to have discernment. I want to be very clear about that. And it feels a lot better for us to stay in our lane of judgment It's very enticing to stay in our little silo, to not widen our aperture, to just not know about these people, because then we can dehumanize them and then we can otherize them. We're like, oh, they're not like us. They're the bad ones. They're awful. They're others, right? We otherize them. They do horrible things. They believe in horrible things. I can't understand how they could ever feel that way or think those thoughts. That is when we perpetuate the divisiveness. And so the solution to this divisiveness in this divisive world is kind of the anti-silo effect, to start getting curious, to hear these stories, to start finding common ground in the most uncommon of places with the most uncommon of people, people that have beliefs that are not the same as ours. And it doesn't mean that we agree with them. Finding common ground does not mean we agree with them, okay? And I talked about this in a previous podcast when I was sexually assaulted in residency as a fourth year resident. Once I got through that period of being a victim, after that, I was able to find compassion for that person who assaulted me, which is fascinating, but very freeing. And that is one good example of finding villain compassion, because I don't know the kind of troubles that that human went through to the point that he felt it was okay for him to drug and attack me. But I can hold compassion for him. I can know that he is the son of a mother and that he was a baby once. And I don't know what his lived experiences were, where he felt that he should do that to another human. And when I go to that place, that's how I can really open up my ability to have discernment for the world, for a world that is always going to have horrible things. There's always going to be rape happening. There's no place in the world full of humans where horrible things don't happen. Like, rape is going to be happening, and I just happen to be on the receiving end of that. And so it's one of those things that I can't just pretend like bad things don't exist in the world. It exists in the world. And so I can accept that while also not adding my own anger and my own feelings of injustice and unfairness and all of those negative emotions. By adding more negativity into a world that has plenty of negativity, I can actually decide consciously and deliberately to actually add compassion to the world by having compassion for the person who harmed me. And so that's what I'm trying to encourage you all, is to find some villain compassion, especially for patients that you might see as villains who come into your clinic. And when you're able to do that, again, that's when you open up this ability to connect with everyone, to develop know, like, and trust with everyone, to develop a mutual respectful relationship with everyone, which is such a cool superpower to have. And I give you the caveat that if you are someone who is triggered because of your lived experience, it does require a healing process, like a moving through that experience, a processing. Like, I wouldn't have been able to find villain compassion in the immediate aftermath of my rape, right? I would have had to have time to kind of process through it. So you kind of have to process through the experience and the negative emotion and be a victim for a period of time and be held in that victimness to then come through it to the other end to be able to find common ground with the most uncommon of people. But if we stay in indignation and injustice and anger at the way the world is and being really angry about it, it's going to be really hard to shift into a place of curiosity and understanding and non-resistance and non-judgment. And so therapy helps, coaching helps, having a really good support network helps when you can get through the point of processing through negative emotion and not being triggered. If you're able to leave that narrow silo, you're able to widen your aperture and to start finding common humanity with these quote-unquote villains and just start creating this kind of villain compassion. And the reason why this is important is that when we are stuck in indignation and injustice and anger about the way the world is, we don't move the needle in improving anything, okay? We don't move the needle in making it any better, right? We're just harming ourselves. We are just causing ourselves a lot of pain and suffering by resisting reality. We can take action to effect change in the world and to try to make it better from a place of acceptance that the world is the way it is, that there is war and rape and murder and all of these awful things. And there's a lot of things going on in the world that there's no easy solution for. But definitely the solution is not to have everybody narrow their view and silo themselves and dehumanize each other, because then we don't communicate. We don't have the candid conversations that actually do move the needle. And so I'm arguing that the solution is actually to process through the feelings of injustice and indignation, anger, and hurt so that we can start to leave our lanes a little bit and find some common ground. All right, so how do we do that? How do we build know, like, and trust with every single human being who walks into our clinic, especially in a divisive world, right? So there's a couple of concepts I want to share. First, of course, is villain compassion. That's a big one, because we're gonna see a lot of people that come into our clinic that our brain is going to want to say that that's a villain, and we're going to want to treat them as such. So having that is important, but then also having compassion for yourself, because as a surgeon, you are not taught how to talk to patients. Typically, we're not given communication skills. We were taught how to operate on people and manage surgical issues. A lot of us were given the narrative that we should love the operating room and that clinic is this onus we have to just bear. And so clinic can be a very energy depleting place where we feel like we're putting on a costume and we're pretending. But it doesn't have to be that way if you learn some of these skills. And so have a little bit of patience with yourself and compassion for yourself, because you didn't receive formal training on how to communicate with quote unquote difficult patients, right? We don't get a class on how to manage other people's emotions and behaviors, and we never learn how to manage our own negative thoughts and emotions that inevitably come up when a difficult patient or a triggering patient enters our clinic. So instead, we often just kind of suck it up and communicate as best we can with the patient and try our best to get the job done, because we're supposed to be martyrs, right? We're supposed to not have feelings about people, even though we do. So we try to like suppress them and push them down. And then internally, we complain and we judge. And a lot of times we can spin around in negative energy because the patient triggered us. But if we can shift our brain and shift our mindset to understand that there really is no such thing as a quote unquote difficult patient, like patients are not difficult. Patients are not toxic and they are not challenging. They really aren't. They can't sap your energy without your permission. They only sap your energy when you let them. Patients are literally just people who behave based on their thoughts and feelings. They show up with their lived experiences, and what we make the patient's words and actions mean is up to us. And so that's where our power lies. And so we can make them mean something like, everybody's stupid, and how can you possibly say vaccines are bad, and the world sucks, and essentially you're denying science, and what's wrong with you? Or we can make it mean something like, I wonder what kind of lived experience this person has had to bring them to that conclusion. And maybe it's just them parroting what they hear on the news or in their social circles or on social media, who knows. But just the fact of getting curious, just the action of getting curious, automatically connects you to that person. Also understanding that patients are adults, right? If they're not adults, they have an adult who's responsible for them. And adult humans can say and do whatever the hell they want. I know it sounds wild to say that, but they can. Like, they can literally go rob a bank if they choose to. Obviously, there'll be consequences for that because they'll probably get caught, but they can do that. That's their prerogative. Similarly, they can yell at our front desk staff about the fact that they've been waiting all day. They can complain loudly about their bill in front of other patients. They can complain about their care in front of all the other patients in the waiting room. They can do whatever the hell they want to do. We cannot control how other people act. And this doesn't mean we condone their behavior or that their behavior won't have consequences. There should be consequences. And absolutely, people who are acting in an unacceptable way, we do need to do something about it. But for example, if a patient is inappropriately angry with us or our staff on the phone and they're just yelling and yelling, we can set a boundary with that person without creating drama. And so setting a boundary involves identifying the boundary that was violated to the person and then telling them what we will do if they don't stop violating that boundary, and then following through. So we can say something like, excuse me, sir, or ma'am, or just excuse me, if you continue to speak to me in this way, I'm going to hang up the phone. So, and then you hang up the phone if they don't stop, but you give them an opportunity to kind of, you know, bring their tone of voice down. And so now you're basically saying like, if you continue to do this behavior, this is what I'm going to do. And then you follow through, you do it. That's kind of the formula for boundary setting. Like, if you smoke in my house, I'm going to ask you to leave, Or if you punch me in the face, I'm going to call the police. Those are other examples. So that's how you kind of set a boundary. If you continue to speak to me in this way, angry person, and it's totally your prerogative to feel and act from anger, I'm going to hang up the phone. And then you do it. And so that's how you set a boundary. Or if a patient is angry, yelling at your staff at the front desk, if you're going to continue to talk to my staff this way, we are going to discharge you from this clinic. And then you do it. And it has to be done from like a calm place without any drama, being aware that their bad behavior has nothing to do with you. And so you can calmly make patients aware of their bad behavior and correct them and set boundaries and enact consequences without adding your own drama or judgment to the situation. When you start like in your head being like, oh my God, people are crazy. What's wrong with this person? Like if we start adding our own drama and our own negative emotion, we're not going to be able to set a boundary as clearly and calmly as if we're like, oh, this person is clearly not doing well, which is not my business. Who knows what's going on in their life? But if they're throwing a fit in this situation, then something's going on under the surface. And I'm about to shut this down because it's not okay for my clinic. Like that is completely emotionally mature place to address these types of patients. And they oftentimes cannot harm you on the back end if you come at it from this angle. Another concept is understanding that default thinking patterns create unnecessary suffering for us. As you know, I'm always talking about how our thoughts create our feelings. And in this particular situation, where we're talking about seeing a patient in clinic or a quote unquote difficult patient, when we let our brain give us whatever default interpretation it has of that patient, we don't hurt the patient, we hurt ourselves. So for example, come on a little journey with me, okay? If you think of the patient we've all had, this patient who complains of everything, right? Their review of systems is just flagrantly positive. It's just everything hurts, right? They're like, this hurts and that hurts and this and that, and let me talk about this. And they're just monopolizing your time talking about all of the things that are wrong with them, just complaining. So if we walk into the exam room to interview that patient and our default thought could be, I don't have time for this. Everyone is crazy. I can't get my documentation appropriately because they're all over the freaking place. This patient needs a psychiatrist, not a surgeon. This is not what I signed up for. This is my nightmare. Great. Like, so this is how my day is going to go and so on and so forth. So if we have those kinds of thoughts, we've all been there. I've definitely been there. We've had these patients who are just these sticky conversationalists and complainers. And the feelings that are caused by our thinking might be irritation, annoyance, anger, frustration, resistance, right? And so the patient's going to sense our discomfort and our disconnection. No matter what we say, if we're in that headspace, they're going to sense that. And so if we let our brain do that and give into that experience, the patient's going to leave feeling unseen and unheard. And so what we might do is complain to our MA and be like, oh my God, that person's crazy. I hope they never come back. Like, I hate them. Or maybe we're going to complain to a colleague or complain to a spouse. But what the patient will do is they will leave feeling unheard, unseen, and uncared for. Okay. And that's the problem. And so they might even go on to give you a bad review, or they might call the board or complain about you or call their lawyer or whatever. And in the end, everybody loses because you left that experience hating every second of it, wanting to escape, and then you ended up complaining about it on the back end to people around you, furthering the negative energy, right? And that patient left feeling completely unheard, unseen, and uncared for. You definitely didn't develop any know, like, or trust with that person. And so in the end, everybody loses. And so that's kind of how these miscommunications happen and these disconnections happen. And then what ultimately ends up happening is that we as physicians get the bad reviews or the board complaints or worst case scenario, like the malpractice suit. So there really is a better way. And instead of doing it the default way, what we can do is to start to realize where we have control. And so our thinking directly affects how we feel, and how we feel determines how we act. And patients are intuitive. And so I've talked about this before, the 7-38-55 rule, the psychological concept that describes how people communicate with their emotions, where 7% of the meaning of a message is conveyed through spoken words, 38% of the meaning is conveyed through our tone of voice, and 55% of the meaning of a message is conveyed through our body language and facial expressions. And this comes from the UCLA psychology professor, Dr. Albert Mehrabian. And we think what matters is the 7%, the words that come out of our mouth. And we try to say the right compassionate words. Oh, I really feel bad for you. It sounds like you've been suffering. And all the patience here is what's happening internally, what's going on with our internal dialogue. That is what they are going to absorb and internalize and take away from the clinic. And so that is what really matters more than the words that come out of our mouth. If we can be aware of our thoughts, we're thinking like, this patient sucks, they're crazy, they're all over the place, they need a psychiatrist, things like that. That's what the patient is going to feel. And they're going to feel rejected. They're going to feel judged. They're going to feel unheard. They're going to feel unseen, unvalidated, invalidated, and unacknowledged. And so when we are thinking negative thoughts and generating negative feelings, the patient can sense it. Not only does our inner negativity show, but it also causes us to feel bad. So it's like a double whammy. The patient feels unheard and they're disconnected. And now we feel crappy too. And now we hate clinic even more. So what's the alternative? Let's get right into these five steps, okay? The five steps, what you've all been waiting for, to create know, like, and trust with all of your patients, even patients who have completely different beliefs than you, okay? So first step, step one, is clean your brain. What do I mean by this? This is an exercise in subtraction. This is a dropping of everything, dropping of agenda, dropping of drama, dropping of expectations, dropping of the ego. You're checking it all at the door and you're going in completely empty, like a clean slate, okay? No expectations, no agenda, no thoughts about this person, no thoughts about your day, even if you're running behind and you're upset that you're not going to be able to make it to the gym or you don't get to pick up your kid, you're going to just drop all of that. I love to visualize like a table in your mind's eye and you have all of your drama and your distractions and your thoughts and you like kind of scattered about the table and you take your arm and you just sweep it clean. And by doing that, you're going into that clinic encounter with like a completely open mind, a clean mind. You want to be able to hold untroubled space for a troubled human being. And so your ego really has to take the back seat here. And even if you are dealing with some troubles, that's totally okay. It's normal. Like you might be troubled by the fact that you're super tired from being on call the night before, or that you're running behind, or whatever the drama is. Maybe you're exhausted because you were operating that morning. Whatever it is, you need to back burner it and put that empty, untroubled container at front and center, ready to hold space for this likely troubled human that you're about to encounter. Because the person is going to come in with all of their baggage and all of their drama and all of their thoughts and all of their emotions. And so you don't want to be distracted by your own. You get rid of yours, you make space for theirs, and that's step one, okay? Just drop it all. Clean your brain, sweep the table clean, drop everything, drop the thoughts, the drama, the ego, the agenda, the expectations, okay? And step two is to then walk into the exam room. And this is an optional step, but a lot of times we need it, so I'm going to add it here. And then give the patient a preframe. What is a preframe? A preframe is essentially a statement that you give to the patient that is transparent and honest and authentic and vulnerable, and it sets the stage to have a human-to-human conversation by saying something like, hey, I'm not an emotionless robot. I'm a human and I'm going through some human experiences, okay? And this absolutely works when you are distracted by your own thoughts and feelings. Like if you're running behind or you're scatterbrained or you're exhausted from being on call the night before or from operating all morning, beautiful time to use a preframe. So you go in and if the patient has been waiting a long time, you say, thank you for waiting, okay? You don't say sorry for the wait because you're not taking responsibility for the fact that the system is the way it is, but you are thanking them for waiting. Then you give them the preframe and you can be completely honest with them. You can give them something like, hey, if I look a little bit exhausted, it's because I am, but rest assured, I'm going to be as present as I can for you and try to help you get some resolution to your problem. Let's get started. Or if I seem a little distracted, it's because I am a little bit scatterbrained today, but I'm going to do my best to be present for you and get you exactly where you need to be. Like, let's get going. Or if you're not feeling well, you can say, I'm a little under the weather today, so if I don't really seem like myself, then that's why. And so a pre-frame really works in clinic, and it's like extending a little olive branch to the patient, like human to human. And what that does is it says like, hey, I'm not special. I'm a human like you, and this is a really hard job, and I'm doing my best. And they will hear that, and they will be like, oh my gosh, this person is willing to share that with me vulnerably. They're courageous. They're authentic. And this is someone I can trust. They're going to tell me the truth. Okay, so that's the first step in developing know, like, and trust with that patient. And I'm not encouraging you to overshare or to monopolize the conversation or make it all about you. It's literally just giving them like a little nugget of human vulnerability. Like, I love thinking of our brain as two parts. Like, we have the human brain and then we have the doctor brain or the surgeon brain. Like, what you want to do is to bring to the table the human brain. And so you're just meeting the patient. You're saying like, here, I'm a human, you're a human. I'm going to give you a little inkling of what's going on in my life just to share with you first so that you feel comfortable sharing with me. And it also takes your brain away from the fear that they're judging you because you're trying so hard to pretend that you are in a better state than you really are. Like, if you're really exhausted and you're trying to be all chipper and cheery, that is going to sap your energy. And you don't have to do that. That's what I'm saying. You can address the elephant in the room and say, I'm a little exhausted because I've been operating all day. So if I seem a little exhausted, I am. It's actually true. But I'm going to do everything I can to be present for you. You know, it's just that little teeny little bit of information. It takes less than 30 seconds. It's super powerful. And so that's your pre-frame. Step three is let them talk. You walk into the clinic, okay, you've cleaned your brain, you ask how you can help them, and you've given them your pre-frame, and then you let them go. Like, don't interrupt them. You can ask little questions to clarify things, but do your best to just kind of let them tell their entire story and give them your whole undivided attention and presence. And it doesn't take that long. I mean, studies show that patients will say everything they need to say in just 2 minutes. There's a fascinating study that was done about 20 years ago that looks at this very thing, and I'm actually giving a TEDx talk about it. And it showed that 78% of patients will say everything they need to say in under 2 minutes to their doctors. So you just give them 2 minutes of your time. Don't interrupt them. Don't try to get your HPI exactly the way you want it. Don't get annoyed that they're not giving it to you in the order that they want, that you want to hear it. Don't try and direct them or control the narrative. Just go on a journey with them. And I love to tell patients to tell me when they were well, because as surgeons, you know, patients tend to come in with a problem that is happening kind of acutely that needs a resolution. And so tell me when you were well and when you were feeling like your normal self, and then tell me everything that happened after that. And then they might give you a long, convoluted story. Like, they might say, I had this symptom and then that symptom, and then I went to this urgent care and that doctor was awful and they did this. Or start bashing other doctors. They might start going off on tangents. Like, let them go there. Go there with them. Be there with them and be part of that story. Again, this is your human brain taking front and center. You are not in doctor mode. You are not in surgeon mode. You are in human mode. They came in there with a whole narrative that they prepared for you. You are there to hear their story. They want to tell you their story. So they have the conch, they have the microphone. You are merely the audience, the non-judgmental audience who's just internalizing it, taking it all in, right? And so respect that and let them speak. And so that takes me right into step four, which is to become them, okay? So become the protagonist in their story. Stand in their shoes as if you were experiencing everything they were experiencing. So when they're telling you some sort of drama that they had at like an urgent care or their primary care's office or something along those lines, imagine what that would have felt like for you. So if they're saying something along the lines of nobody listened to me, or this doctor told me I had this, but really I had that, and they gave me this wrong treatment, or they told me I should do this, or I waited this long, whatever it is that they have to give you, because they typically have some sort of drama or some, you know, very embellished story to tell you that they want to share with you, let them tell you everything. And then try to imagine what it would be like for you to be them, to experience that, really stand in their shoes, go on a journey with them, lose yourself as if you're no longer there. Like, visualize everything they're saying in your mind's eye and go on it with them. Become them in their story. You're very much in your human brain. You're not in your doctor brain. And so these are the first four steps, and they only take a couple of minutes. It's basically a 5-minute process. It's not a super long process. We can all do it. And if you just do it every single time, it will dramatically improve your ability to develop know, like, and trust with all patients. And it will make your life so much easier because you're not exhausting yourself with your own drama. And so the final step is very easy. Step 5 is just to acknowledge and validate their feelings. This is also super quick. It is basically a moment, a teeny tiny little sentence that says, "It sounds like you've been through a lot," or "It sounds like you've been through the ringer," or "I hear you. It makes sense that you're here." What this does is it tells the patient that they're not crazy, because a lot of patients fear that maybe they're overreacting, or they're making a mountain out of a molehill, or they shouldn't be like bothering you. They're like wasting your time. And what you want to say to them is what you feel is completely valid, and I'm here for it. And when you say that, it normalizes their whole experience. It makes them feel seen and heard and understood and held. And it kind of wraps everything in a nice little bow on this whole human encounter. Okay, so once you've done that, you've cleaned your brain, step one, you've dropped everything, subtracted everything out of your mind so that you can hold untroubled, unjudgmental space for a troubled human. Then you walk in, you give a pre-frame if necessary, and then you let them talk without interrupting. You give them your full, undivided attention. Then you lose yourself in their story and you become a protagonist in their story. Start visualizing their whole story like a movie in your head. And you are the main character, and then you acknowledge and validate their feelings. You know, like, "Oh my gosh, it sounds like you've been through so much. Thank you for sharing that. That sounds like quite the story." Whatever it is, just say to say like, "Hey, it makes sense you're here. It makes sense you're not feeling like your best self. It makes sense that you are struggling at this moment." Whatever you need to say, you just say, "Hey, I hear you. There's nothing wrong with you. I'm glad you came. You're a human who is valid in what you're feeling and experiencing." And so that whole thing takes 5 minutes, usually less than 10 at most. And then now you can shift out of human brain and go right into doctor surgeon brain. And that's when you're like, "Okay, exam." Then give them what you think the diagnosis is and the next steps. I want you to start to practice this, to jump from human brain to surgeon brain. Because I think when we think that we have to be in surgeon brain, what a lot of us are doing is we're showing up in surgeon brain and we're pretending. We're pretending really hard because we know that we have to develop know, like, and trust with our patients, and the patients can sense it, and it doesn't work. What I'm inviting you to do is to stop pretending. Drop it all, put on the human suit, become the genuine, authentic human being that you are without pretending, without being afraid of being vulnerable or being seen as weak, without having an ego, without thinking you're this all-knowing, paternalistic, high-achieving, better-than-everyone-else physician, but you are just basically going in as someone who has a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of skill, and you're meeting them where they're at. You're saying, "I see you, human. Here's me also as a human. Let's come together." You connect on a human level, and then you move into the doctor-surgeon brain, the doctor-surgeon self. You do that with every single patient. Do your best to try to find common ground with the most uncommon of people, and you will open up a whole world of exploding your reputation, protecting yourself throughout your career, and getting glowing reviews from all of your patients, even if you feel like you didn't really do anything for them. Like, you didn't really solve their problem or operate on them. You gave them the value of your presence, okay? Your presence is so valuable. I don't think you realize how valuable it is. That is what people want. They want authentic presence. So go out, implement these 5 steps, and go explode the popularity of your practice, okay? So remember, step 1, clean your brain. Clean up your thoughts, drop your agenda. Step 2, use a preframe. You don't always have to, but if you need one, go ahead and use it. You can kind of set the human stage. Step 3, let them tell their story. Give them your undivided attention. And step 4, put yourself in their shoes. And step 5, acknowledge and validate them. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Hey, when you got into surgery when you were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you told yourself a story that it was going to be amazing, and it's not. That's okay. If you want to learn how to navigate the landscape of life after training, you are in luck. I have created a course just for you. It's called Empowered Surgeons Curriculum. It gives you everything you need to learn that you didn't learn in training about how to be a human in the world of surgery. All you have to do is go to courses.melthackercoaching.com/courses/empowered surgeon or click the link in the show notes. See you inside the course.